Hello, wonderful lovelies. No, that was Russell Brand. What's up, people? This episode is episode 49. It's North Mythology. Our ode to Odin is what I like to call it.
Nice.
You're watching Cerebral Flex. I just wanted to give a introduction. I went to this website called modernmythologist.com. So if you want to go there now, you can follow along, because this I thought was the best, clearest description of the beginnings of Norse mythology. So yeah, the first area of here is first there was the realm of fire and ice. In the beginning, before the existence of the oceans, the sky, or anything green, there is only Gnungagap, the abysmal gap of primordial chaos and silence. In one moment, there was nothing but the abyss, but in the next, two worlds appeared from the gap, a land of fire and a land of ice and mist. The realm of fire was Muspelheim, a world bathed in fire, flames and lava. The realm of ice and mist was Niflheim, a world covered in frozen mountains and rivers that released a poisonous mist. In the middle of the realm laid Fergelmer, the spring from where all rivers flow from. As the cold rivers of Niflheim poured out into the abyss, the waters began to freeze, and the northern half of Gnungagap became enshrouded with ice. The southern half, though, was blazing hot. The fires of Muspelheim spread outwards into the abyss, preventing the ice from crossing into its domain. With the freezing ice to the north and the flaming fires to the south, the two elements fought for dominance in the middle of Gnungagap. So, good morning, Jareth. This is a lot like, Genesis in the Bible in a lot of ways as we go further.
I agree. A lot of these stories are written by a guy named what was his name? Snorri Sturluson, in the 13th century. And so the thing about Snorri is he took a lot of these myths, and he was a Norse pagan but also a Christian, and so he was trying to figure out a way to take some of these myths and meld them into like a creation story, like how the Christians had. So that's why, as you go along and you read about like the beginnings of how everything was formed, it comes off as very very Christian, like most myths do.
Yeah, no, I mean, later on when it gets into the Adam and Eve like structure, it's just like okay, you guys robbed this fucking story.
And and the best thing is the Adam and Eve story is not even like the Christian story. It dates back even further. You can trace it to like Egypt and further back to Mesopotamia. Like it's a story that every culture seems to have told.
Yeah. It's scary how unoriginal different generations are. Like, I don't think we should veer off too far from this whole, you know, Earth creation scenario.
Yes.
Anyway, all right, so the next section is the giant and the cow. Mm-hmm. So over time, ice began to melt, and as the droplets of water fell, they began to form into the first Jotun, or giant. This Jotun was Ymir, the ancestor of all giants and the first primordial being. Ymir's blue skin rippled with muscles and showed his great strength. He was humongous, easily the size of a planet. Overjoyed by his own existence, Ymir let out a rumbling roar that echoed throughout the entire abyss. After his shattering scream, Ymir felt weary and fell into a deep sleep. As Ymir slept, the flames of Muspelheim made him sweat. The sweat from his limbs fell from his body and formed into the first generation of giants. While they weren't as big as or strong as their father, they were still abnormally tall and had great strength. And while some giants were hideous, others were beautiful. As Ymir continued to sweat new giants into existence, another being emerged from the melting ice. It was the celestial cow, Adhumla. Adhumla's first thought was hunger, so she began to lick the ice, nourishing herself with the ice's salt. With Adhumla licking away, Ymir woke from his sleep and got his first glance at the primordial cow. Instantly, he thought of her as food and began to walk towards his first meal. Seeing the danger out of the corner of her eye, Adhumla released four rivers of milk from her udders and shot them towards Ymir's mouth. Finding the taste of the milk to be incredible, Ymir decided no harm should come to the cow. And so Adhumla's milk would nourish Ymir and his brood. So now we got jettisons of milk streaming from four udders of a giant ass cow.
Yep.
Into a dude that's as big as a planet.
Mm-hmm. Blue skin.
It's getting crazy.
Yep.
So I don't know if you have anything to comment on Ymir and this weird relationship he has with this giant cow.
Well, as opposed to like other creation myths, it is a bit more odd. You have Ymir. There, first of all, there's always chaos. There's the gap. There's nothingness, and then from the nothingness comes usually a male being first.
And then a giant cow, you know.
And then the giant cow, you know, that's representative. You know, she's a female, obviously, because she has udders and she's giving life and milk to Ymir. And they're forming a cyclical relationship. So yeah,
this all goes back to the stories of the Germanic peoples and the Scandinavians taking mushrooms during Christmas.
Yes,
I think this is exactly how they got to the story.
Yeah, and I mean, we could get into it later, but you have the berserkers of the Norse people who would they trip balls on mushrooms and run into battle naked. Tripping yeah. their balls off.
Yeah, berserkers were nuts.
So
they were intense.
But yes, that's my commentation on that. I don't know. Is ice usually salty? I guess it is, huh?
Yeah, I didn't want to get into that.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think chemistry is out the window right now.
We got
giant primordial cows spraying rivers of milk into a giant's mouth right now. So, all right. Then there's the being in the ice creation, the beginning of the ice seers, mm-hmm. The gods and the goddesses. So Adhumla continued to lick the ice's salt. And after a long day of continuous licking, Adhumla's tongue brushed upon long dark hair. It's not upsetting at all. After the second day of continuous licking, a head was revealed, and on the third day, an entire being had been licked free from the ice. This being was Buri. Is that how you say it?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. The first god and ancestor to the Aesir tribe of gods and goddesses. He was big, strong, and incredibly beautiful. Buri started his bloodline by having a son named Bor. Bor went on to choose the giantess Bestla, daughter of Bolthorn, to be his wife. Together, they had three half-god, half-giant children. They were Odin, Vili, and Ve. The three brothers had an aura of nobility that made them stand out from the giants. Their hair and beards were lush and full. Their strength rivaled that of the gods, and their beauty easily surpassed any being in existence. So yeah, now we got gods and goddesses hopping out of the salty ice. Mm-hmm. You know, just, yo, I was here the whole time. Why didn't you lick me earlier?
So with all the creation myths, you have, you know, the male and the female archetype, and then we're birthing the god children. And honestly, Odin is arguably the coolest of the Norse gods, and you never hear anything about his brothers Vili and Ve. They kind of take like a back seat, and I think I'd like to hear more about them.
Yeah. What happened to them?
It's just like in Greek mythology. You got the three brothers, Zeus, Hades, and Poseidon. But Zeus is like the all-star and everybody knows about him. Why is it only one? You made three. Why don't you expand on the other two a little bit more?
Yeah, I have no clue.
It's bad character development is what I'm saying.
For real. And after this, I'm sure we're both going to dig into the history of Vili and Ve.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I want to know now. So then the giants had to fall. You know, they couldn't last forever.
Nope.
No one lasts forever on top. The abyss was now full of beings. You said Ymir. How do you say it? Ymir? I say Ymir.
Yeah, Ymir. Ymir. A lot of different pronunciations, but I think the correct one is Ymir.
All right. So Ymir was greedily inhaling Adhumla's milk while new giants were being created from his sweat. The giants born from sweat were pairing off and creating new generations. And watching with disgust in their eyes were the three godly brothers. To Odin, Vili, and Ve, the giants were savage and barbaric, which I'm going to stop here. That was really weird for me because, like, the giants gave them their existence. Like, they wouldn't be there without their fathers.
Yes.
The giants, you know? That's kind of fucked up that they just turned on half of their ancestry.
Well, that's kind of like you see that in the Greek myths too, especially with Zeus and his brothers battling their father Cronos. Except Cronos was a little bit more nefarious because he was going to eat his children. He constantly ate his children. That's where you get that famous depiction of the god Cronos eating the baby. It's a really old painting. So I think this is kind of in a way kind of playing off of that Snorri mixing ancient myths and Christian mythology with the Norse mythology to make it more like palatable to other people who are interested in it. Because you have to think too, the Norse people, it's not like how we have religions like even Hinduism in a broad sense. They were all like smaller cults that would have their own individual practices. So though somebody might worship one version of Odin, somebody else might have a totally different version of Odin. The gods' names were known, but like the myths were kind of individually told.
All right.
So
thank you.
Yeah.
So yeah, they just thought, you know, the giants were savage and barbaric. They weren't as beautiful or noble as them, and the brothers felt that the giants had no right to be rulers of Gnungagap. That's a word you should say 5 times fast. I tried. The gods believed that they should rule instead. They seemingly ignored the fact that they were half giants themselves. When Ymir was asleep, the three brothers snuck into his resting place and attacked him. What took place next was a monumental battle heard throughout the entire abyss. The battle waged on, but eventually ended with the death of Ymir. As Ymir fell, gallons of his blood gushed into the abyss, creating a flood. With nowhere to escape, most of the giants drowned. That's dark. Mm-hmm. Only the giant Bergelmer and his wife survived by floating on a piece of wood.
That's Noah.
Right? That's also a fucking Titanic.
Yes. Yeah, but... But James Cameron Titanic would have come out for several centuries after these were written.
Right. And that girl in Titanic wouldn't even let him creep onto the board with her.
Yeah. So
they would have both been fine if they used their body warmth on that board. And I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. So the giant Bergelmir, his wife was nice and let him float on the piece of wood.
Yeah. They're at least nice like that.
Yeah.
All right. So now we have a bunch of drowned dead giants. We got a bunch of murderous sons.
Yep.
What's Odd Humla doing right now? She's probably freaking out. Anyway.
I don't know. You don't really hear right. about her too much after right. this.
She's definitely upset.
Yes, definitely.
So what do they do with their dead father? Well, I mean, what else would you do, right? Here we go. Finding the realms of fire and ice to be unlivable, the three brothers took Ymir's corpse to the middle of Gnungagap to create a new world. They constructed soil and the earth in the shape of a flat disc from Ymir's skin and muscles. They made the oceans from his blood, which flowed at the edges of the disc, rocks from his teeth, and vegetation from his hair. That one doesn't even make sense. Finding maggots in Ymir's rotten flesh, the brothers used them to create the dwarves. I love it. The dwarves would go on to become mighty beings who were extremely skilled in the art of craftsmanship and smithing. The gods then took Ymir's skull and raised it over the flat earth. There they shaped the skull into a dome so it would hang above the earth as the sky. They then took Ymir's brains and morphed them into clouds. At each corner of the earth, the brothers placed a dwarf to keep the sky from falling. These dwarves were known as Nordi for the north, Ostir for east, Sudri for the south, and Vestri for the west. After creating the sky, the gods took embers from the fire realm Muspelheim and placed them in the sky. Some of these embers stood still, becoming the stars. They stood still. I should have spaced those words differently. While others began to move, becoming the planets. But the most important embers were called the sun and the moon. Finally, the three brothers, godly brothers, took Ymir's eyelashes and created a barrier that encircled the middle area of the flat earth. This middle area was known as Midgard. The barrier was needed to protect the land from the surviving giants, who made their new home on the outside areas of the earth. This outskirt area became Jotunheim, the land of the giants. With this, the gods had finished their ferocious creation of the world. What a lovely, beautiful story. Not only are they murderous, but they created an entire world from his corpse. They did like some weird death art.
Yeah, you want to know what I appreciate the most about this myth?
I mean, what's missing here? Nothing. It's beautiful.
There's really nothing, but I just appreciate the fact that the gods made the earth round and not flat.
No, they put a dome from a skull over the flat earth. It's flat. The earth is flat. Everybody knows this.
The ice walls, remember?
Yep.
That's actually, if you look past the ice walls, that's where the giants are at the moment.
Jotunheim.
Yep. YOLO. Yep.
So
that's one thing that's a very Christian thing too, though. Just as a side thing, in the Bible and the creation myth, there's always this talk of this dome that's over the sky's created in a dome, and I really hate that interpretation. Because you know it does lend credence to the flat earth theory.
Yeah, I mean the earth is flat. Everybody knows it.
Yeah. It's not like if you go up, you know, a little bit past the atmosphere, you can see the curvature of the earth or anything. It's made up.
You told me. In con news. Love that shit.
Where did the first humans come from?
Here we go. As Odin, Vili, and Ve explored Midgard, they came upon two branches of wood.
They explored Midgard, but they created it.
Yeah.
Weird.
They explored it. No, they came upon two branches.
Oh, okay. All right.
They created the branches.
Ah, okay.
Remember?
Yes.
With a corpse.
Yes.
And they somehow made keratin, hair, into vegetation.
When
which is not edible.
Keratin. When I finally destroy my enemies and I start to build, the cops come upon me and in my experiments, I'm just going to tell them I'm building a new world.
That's a Criminal Minds episode, bro. Like, like a city landscape. Like, you know, that like CEOs will look at for a new project development.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But it'll be a corpse.
Yeah.
Oh some man, that's a good episode. They should have done that.
Some guy who got super into Norse mythology.
But no, but like made a modern city.
Yeah.
Like skyscraper bones. Little cars.
That would be Ed Gein's wet dream.
Something like that. That'd be very difficult.
All right. So they found some branches made of wood, one made of ash and one made of elm.
Correct. Not at all like Adam and Eve. Mm. One made of ash, one made of elm, wanting to fill Midgard with new beings. The brothers created the first two humans out of the wood. A man named Ash was made out of ash, and the woman named Embla, who is made out of elm. The brothers gifted their consciousness, intelligence, and Midgard itself. So they gave them Midgard. The new world would belong to them and their descendants. Satisfied with their creations, the brothers decide to build a home for only the gods to live in. And so way above Midgard in the sky, the gods created Asgard, the great fortress and dwelling of the Æsir.
It's a little elitist of them.
Yeah. They're like, you can have Midgard, but we're going to live far away from your asses.
Yep.
I don't like you very much. So then they had to have day and night. So much time passed after the creation of Asgard. Many new gods, goddesses, giants, and humans were born. But the Æsir soon realized that the humans had no way to tell time. And while the sun and moon existed, they did not yet move. To fix this, Odin took the giantess Nott, Night, and her son Dagir, Day, and place them in the sky, each with their own chariot and horse. There the two would circle around Midgard once every 24 hours, bringing day and night to the sky. I don't know how they were moving on their chariots by themselves, because not long after this, a human named Mundilfari had two beautiful children. In fact, he believed them to be so beautiful, he named them after the sun and the moon. He named his daughter Sol and his son Manny. Angry with Mundilfari's arrogance, the Æsir took his children and placed them in the sky, and there the two would pull the sun and moon on chariots. See, this doesn't even make sense, because like the chariots were already moving.
Yeah,
but how are they moving without these two like slave children moving them?
I just think it was real dickish of them to be like, oh, you name them after objects in the sky, we're taking them.
They should have just put more thought into this whole story.
Snorri had other things to get to. So he just kind of like rushed that one. He's like, chariots pulling the sun and moon.
Well, they were all probably dying before they were even 40 from just a common cold back then. So maybe like a story like this was legitimate enough for such a short existence.
Yeah.
I don't know.
He was probably, you know, he actually probably rode it with just the chariot with the sun and the moon being pulled by the horses. And somebody was like, how do the horses not run off? And he's like, ah, fuck. So this is probably like he went back and edited it.
Yeah, they never mentioned the horses.
Nope.
All right. I mean, yeah, they should have turned Sol and Manny into horses to pull the chariots.
Yeah.
But I guess they have 24 hours, so I don't know.
I don't know.
What are they doing on the backside? Once they get to the other side, do they just stop or do they keep going around?
Yeah, because if the earth is flat, it's not like...
Right. I mean, they could pop up on the same side and go down on the same side. It doesn't really matter.
I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Another story I'd like the answer to.
Right, they're putting way too much work into the day. They don't even have to go full, you know, circle. They could just come up 75% and then go back down.
Yep.
Anyway. And then crops wouldn't grow and a lot of other things wouldn't happen. But anyway. Creation was complete, but by killing Ymir, Odin and his brothers had started a timer to complete an utter destruction. And while there were many more stories and adventures to come, the prophesized event that would destroy the known world was ticking closer and closer. The event known as Ragnarok. I had to do that voice for both of those sentences.
That's good. I like it.
So that brings us to this wonderful creature, Odin, the one of the three brothers. Three brothers.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Rick and Morty. So yeah, Odin, also called Wodan. Am I saying that right? Woden?
Woden. It's Woden.
All right. Mm-hmm. So there's W-O-D-A-N and then Woden with W-O-D-E-N and Wotan or Wotan.
Wotan.
W-O-T-A-N.
Yep.
And it's all from different Germanic tribes during the times. There's like, I don't know, 70 different concepts of the beginning and of Odin and what he represents. So, he was one of the principal gods in Norse mythology. His exact nature and role, however, are difficult to determine, like I said, because of the complex picture of him given to a wealth of archaeological and literary sources. The Roman historian Tacitus stated that the Teutons worshipped Mercury, and because Dies Mercury, Mercury's day, was identified with Wednesday, Woden's day, there's little doubt that the god Woden, the earlier form of Odin, was meant. Though Woden was worshipped preeminently, there is not sufficient evidence of his cult to show whether it was practiced by all the Teutonic tribes or to enable conclusions to be drawn about the nature of the god. Later literary sources, however, indicate that at the end of the pre-Christian period, Odin was the principal god in Scandinavia. So from the earliest times, he was considered a war god. He appeared in heroic literature as the protector of heroes. Fallen warriors joined him in Valhalla. The wolf and the raven were dedicated to him. He had two of the ravens. His magical horse, Sleipnir, had eight legs. That's cool as shit. Teeth inscribed with runes and the ability to gallop through the air and over the sea. Odin was the great magician among the gods and was associated with runes. He hung in a tree for 9 days and nights to figure that shit out, and we'll get into that. He was also the god of poets. In outward appearance, he was tall, old man with flowing beard and only one eye. The other he gave in exchange for wisdom. That's another cool story. He was usually depicted wearing a cloak and a wide-brimmed hat and carrying a spear. So Odin and his wife Frigg, also called Freya or Frisia, depending on which Germanic peoples are saying it, had two boys, Thor and Baldur. Frigg was a promoter of marriage and fertility, and Baldur was immune to harm, but Loki found out he could be harmed with mistletoe and killed him with it, which is a really sad story. And then Frigg tried to save her son Baldur, but failed. In some Icelandic stories, she is depicted as the weeping and loving mother. While others stress her loose morals, Frigg was known in some Germanic cultures as Frisia, and her name survived in English in the word Friday. But yeah, that's just a quick intro into Odin's little family. But there's a lot more to it, which Jareth is going to bring to us. No pressure. So as somebody who very much enjoys history,
and also mythology and the like. I remember growing up, my mom got these two different books, and they were picture books, and you can still get them today. They're actually really good if you want to get your kids into mythology. There's a Greek one and there's a Norse one, and they're by D'Alares. And so I went through and I've read all the myths, and I've done my own research into them. And Odin is definitely the coolest. Odin is what you would consider the, I mean, he kind of embodies several different archetypes, because when we are looking at myths, we kind of try to figure out what the archetype of this character is playing in a metaphysical sense. Yeah. And how the how it relates to us and our psyche, and you know, how we can, you know, follow in their footsteps, what lessons can be learned. And that's what myths are. They're stories that are told about the gods to kind of teach lessons. I tend to like the stories from Norse and Greek mythology and Hindu mythology and all the other mythologies over the monotheistic mythologies, because the gods can make mistakes. Odin is by no means, he's not a good character, even though he's the head of the pantheon. He's a very gray character. He is relentless in his pursuit of knowledge. I mean, one of the first actions that we hear about him taking is against his own father, yeah, with his brothers. They're like killing him, dismantling him, and then making new life from the bones, which is kind of symbolic of like life and death, rebirth, growth, all of that, just in a very violent sense. But I guess life was also very violent back then.
Yeah, you definitely don't have to kill your parents to, no, you know, grow as a person.
No, you don't. You probably definitely don't. That one. Yeah. but as far as somebody who's like the head of like a pantheon, aside from some of the Hindu gods who have like avatars of themselves, I think Odin's more interesting and complex than Zeus, because Zeus is kind of a tyrant, whereas Odin really isn't. He's kind of like an arbiter between the gods and their disputes. He is a very curious person. The thing he cares about above all is knowledge. He goes to Mimir's well, and Mimir's well allows you to see everything in existence.
Who was Mimir?
Mimir was a Jotun. He was one of the oldest Jotuns, and he had a well that you could gaze into, and he would gaze into it, and it gave him much knowledge, and he could see many things all over the earth. And Odin went to Mimir and asked him to use and drink from his well, and Mimir would allow it, but for a price. And so that's why Odin's depicted with one of his eyes missing, typically his left eye, because if you think of it in terms of a magical sense, Odin is more of the left-hand path variety than the right-hand path variety. Left-hand path is more, I guess you could say, self-absorbed. It's very, what can the universe do for me? Whereas right-hand path would be known as more like green witchery, where you're more giving. In magical thought, usually you take in energy with your left hand and you expel energy with your right hand. So Odin's very left-hand path, and that's why you'll typically see him depicted with his left eye gone, because he gave it in exchange for knowledge.
Hmm.
Yeah. He is like the Gandalf archetype. I don't think a lot of people really know that, because you said he has like the wide brim hat, the gray mm-hmm. cloak. He carries a spear, which obviously Gandalf doesn't, but he's the main inspiration for Gandalf, because Tolkien's, the love of his life was Norse mythology. He was, he studied Norse mythology. He knew how to speak lots of different languages from the Germanic people. He translated Beowulf, which is a Scandinavian story. So that's why a lot of the stuff that you'll see in Lord of the Rings has this Scandinavian overarching undertow to it when it comes to characters, names, or places, or even his own creation myths.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you mentioned his animal familiars, which were the wolves. There's two of them, Geri and Friki, and he has two ravens, Hugin and Munin. And the ravens, they would fly all over the earth every day, all over Midgard, and
collect knowledge for him.
Collect knowledge for him and whisper in his ear, and he'd have information every day.
Yeah, I loved that idea.
What, of the ravens flying?
Yes, I would love that. Knowledge?
Yeah, I would too.
Fucking love it.
just a raven coming, flying off at the middle of the day.
Weird random shit. Prime Minister of Australia is constipated.
Yeah, yeah, and he'd know it all. And so, Odin, he gives his eye for knowledge, and then also he hangs himself from a tree you mentioned, and that tree's the world tree, which is Yggdrasil. And the world tree is essentially the Norse cosmology in a broader sense. So in Norse cosmology, there's 9 different realms, different worlds, which you mentioned some of. And so by hanging himself from Yggdrasil, he was doing that again, like literally committing suicide for knowledge. And that knowledge was for the runes, which the runes were used to cast spells, to do divination with. And eventually the runes were used as kind of a rough form of the first Norse Germanic people's alphabet. Right. And so he's literally always giving more of himself and sacrificing more of himself to gain as much knowledge as possible. So he's a really interesting character. And the fact that he's gaining all this knowledge and amassing it all, but he's not doing it for power's sake. He's just doing it for knowledge's sake, because he doesn't necessarily hoard the knowledge. He does move his chess pieces with it, but his pursuit is all in
selfish.
Yeah, it's all in pursuit of knowledge, and also like he understands that Ragnarok's going to come, and he's trying to find the knowledge to stop it. But at a certain point, he realizes that it won't be stopped because everything is cyclical. And so like how he killed his father, and I think this is where like the idea of karma comes in. So how he killed his father and created the world. His death will also be a violent death. And from his death and the death of the gods, a new world will be born. Because Ragnarok isn't just about, I think a lot of people hear the words Ragnarok and they understand that it's like this apocalyptic event where there's a fight with the gods. But at the end of the fight, from the ashes rise a new set of gods and a new Adam and Eve figure almost. And then they set forth the new world. And then it repeats again and again and again and again, which I think is interesting that you find that in pretty much any myth that you read, with the exception of the major religions. In the major religions, there tends to be just this focus on the afterlife, where in some of these more holistic religions, there seems to be a constant cycle of death and rebirth.
Yeah.
And I would much rather focus on that than... We're here to use this world for our own self gain. And then, you know, when we die, it's all good.
Yo, little segue.
Yeah.
You heard about Bezos and the bridge in Netherlands?
I did.
Rotterdam?
Yep.
What a fuck. Anyway, moving on.
Nobody in the Norse myths is as evil as Jeff Bezos. That is for sure. Yeah. So... Odin is also I think a lot of people they watch the new Marvel movies and they think that because they have the Norse characters in it that it's true to Norse mythology. It's not at all. So in Marvel, Loki is depicted as the brother, the like half brother of Thor, and that's not actually true. Odin is Thor's father, but his blood brother is Loki. And so Loki and Odin meet each other, and Odin makes a blood pact with him. So they cut their palms. They mix their blood.
You meant to say Odin's brother was Baldur, right?
No. Loki.
Loki made a blood pact, but is his blood brother just because of the blood?
Yes.
All right.
So Odin and Loki are our blood brothers. And that's why you will see in the Norse myths, Loki gets into trouble a lot because he is the trickster archetype. Whereas Odin is kind of a bunch of different archetypes. He's like the father archetype. He's the warrior archetype. He's the old mentor archetype. Loki is solidly in the trickster archetype camp. And so Loki will constantly be getting into trouble. And the gods will get pissed off and they'll go to Odin. And Odin will be like, well, Loki, I need to punish you, but I'm not going to punish you like that bad. And he'll usually play like Loki play his games. Mm-hmm. And usually Loki will come out on top. He'll learn something. But Odin is very soft towards Loki. And I find that interesting too, because Odin's also aware that Loki will eventually kill Baldur, his son, which will trigger Ragnarok. but despite all that, and despite the fact that Loki's going to bring destruction, he keeps Loki close to him and has love for Loki, and is essentially his brother, not by birth, but by the mixing of their blood.
Yeah, that doesn't make sense.
Why?
If you know some dude's going to kill your son later on, you got to murk him. You know Ragnarok's going to come either way. You just got to murk that dude if he's trying to kill your son. No way.
But that's what sets off Ragnarok.
Yeah. So, I mean, he could have postponed Ragnarok and killed Loki and not had his son die.
Yeah, but
at least not the day Loki killed him.
Maybe.
I don't know. You always want to prevent the death of your children. I mean, what's wrong with this guy? He's so wise, he doesn't care about the death of his own child. That's a wise dude or a fool. I don't know.
Now, again, it's all about the pursuit of knowledge. I think once you gain so much knowledge, you probably become apathetic to most of the people in your life. That doesn't sound
wise, though. And isn't not the end pursuit of knowledge wisdom? Is not wisdom more valuable than knowledge? Knowledge is just a waste of time if you're not gaining any wisdom.
I like it. But again, that's the part of these myths that's nice, is these gods, they're flawed and they're not good people.
Real flawed. They kill their dads. They don't care if their son dies. They're just freaking messed up.
Yeah.
Messed up.
Yep.
No different than the god Christians follow that just like, you know, send murderous bears to kill a bunch of children. So I don't know. There's a lot of weird fucking parts of these stories. Just someone as literal as me. It's like, okay, why are you killing your dad? Why don't you care about your kid? Like, what's going on, guys?
Yep.
Who wrote this shit?
I mean, he kept Mimir's head because Mimir was beheaded in the Aesir Vanir War. And he would keep his head and he would talk to it and discuss Ragnarok.
Yeah, I read that.
And consult him for knowledge and stuff. So this guy, he's done a lot of stuff. He's given his eye. He's hung himself from a tree. He keeps the head of a Jotun around to talk to him and foretell the doom of the gods. He's definitely a person who I think kind of is embodying and showing like how, again, like you said, pursuit of knowledge isn't necessarily a good thing if you don't gain the wisdom from it.
Yeah.
Which is why we look at these different archetypes in all these different stories. It's all about trying to understand how we work. But the reason that Odin even came up is because you thought that it was really cool that he was the leader of the Wild Hunt. If you remember our episode about the pagan holidays, we talked about Yule and the Wild Hunt, and the Wild Hunt being a ghostly procession of dead that wander through the winter sky and hunt of the white stag. So every Yule time, when people would hide inside from the Wild Hunt, they thought that the Draugr, which were the Norse dead, would rise up from their graves and follow Odin in his hunt across the skies for the stag. So like the Germanic peoples, they recognized that Odin was the head of the pantheon and that he was all these archetypes, but they didn't necessarily think that he was a good god, and they didn't think that he was somebody that you would mess with very lightly.
Yeah.
as you were saying, they don't know if there was cults to Odin or
Yes, and then nature happens. So I'm just going to be in intermission for a second. Again, like guard on the side of Wayne's World.
Yeah. So for him, he's one of the more metal gods. And he is probably the most dynamic out of all of them. Like Loki, he's the archetypal trickster. Thor, he's, you know, the god of war and thunder. Baldur is like a Jesus archetype because he dies, and then after Ragnarok, he comes back to life. Frigg, like you said, she's the mother. She's the caring mother, the weeping mother. So they all kind of have their own archetypes that they settle into, but his is the most dynamic and interesting, and people were scared of him. People respected him. And again, they don't know if he was worshipped in like large cults or anything like that. But if you look at archaeological evidence and stuff like that of, you know, small villages or even isolated huts and stuff like that, usually you'll find some type of ode to Odin there. So he is definitely widely worshipped, even by the people who were of a more animistic mindset.
Yeah.
He's definitely a spirit of the region for sure.
That's definitely a beautiful
that got ruined by Nazis, as everything did.
Yeah, man. They ruined, like, the swastika was a peace symbol. It was a
Hindu peace awesome. Symbol.
Yeah, or is it Jainist? Or I don't know. There's other religions, and
but you'll see a lot of white nationalists that will say that they're true Norse pagan, and true Norse pagans are not racist white people who are hell-bent on the destruction of everyone who's not an Aryan. With any type of movement that's neo-Nazi in nature, they like to take these myths and these legends and distort them for their own reasons, kind of like the church likes to do at times. So I know, like, there's been a lot of controversy over the years with, white nationalists wearing Thor's hammer or rune shirts and stuff like that. But just because somebody wears those types of things doesn't necessarily mean that they're a white nationalist. There are actually a lot of people out there who still try to connect with this Norse mythology and the spirits in the land, and they're not awful, terrible people. So I just wanted to throw that out there. Don't cancel the Norse people. Cancel the white nationalists.
Just because you like Nietzsche doesn't mean you're a Nazi. Just because you like Norse mythology doesn't make you a Nazi.
Yeah, that's really what it comes back to, is a lot of these things, you know, Nazis like them, but that doesn't make them Nazis.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah.
I think Odin would.
I mean, Hitler loved his dog. So is everyone that loves a dog a Nazi?
Cat people would probably say yeah.
No, I think overall, like Rick said in Rick and Morty, is that people that own dogs just want to be in control over someone or something. They have this need to have power over something. Whereas cat people don't need this weird obsession to control something else.
Actually, Rick's the perfect archetype of kind of the dynamic thing that Odin is.
In a weird sense.
Yeah. I think he's a little bit more
Odin drank a lot.
He did drink a lot. He kept the dead warriors from battlefields.
All right.
Yeah. So
he's dark. Yeah.
He's very dark. He's one of the darkest for sure. I think the only god, well, actually she's a goddess darker than Odin would be Kali.
Yeah. Yeah,
cutting the heads off of demons and drinking the their blood.
Skulls and
yep,
created the thuggy
or
that's where the word thug came from too.
Did it? I did not know that.
Yep,
nice. I like it.
So, yeah, I mean, we're not scholars. Neither of us have PhDs or even master's degrees, but we enjoy bringing you this content. Mm-hmm. And for those of you that like the information, hit the subscribe button and like it. For all you trolls out there, please kindly fuck off. I don't know what you're doing. We're just two people trying to make a fun, you know, setting for conversation. And, you know, you're driving to work or you're driving around or whatever you're doing. You listen, you get some cool information you didn't have before. Mm-hmm. And you might take it upon yourself to search a little more for more information. And that's why we're here. It's not to belittle anyone. It's not to make anyone feel dumb. It is to bring you good information.
It's to bring you information that we find interesting and like to discuss so that you can discuss it with your friends.
And if you don't like it, again, you can kindly fuck off.
Yes.
I mean, you are completely welcome to fuck off.
Yes.
Or hit the like button and subscribe. It's entirely up to you.
And if you are inclined to fuck off and you don't want to believe in the realism of the Norse myths, then I dare you to go online and find some rituals to Odin and practice and do them and see what happens.
Interesting challenge.
Uh-huh. If I really wanted to be mean, I'd tell him to go do some rituals out of the Necronomicon, but you know, I don't think anybody deserves that.
Yeah, I disagree.
All I'm saying is that with all these ancient texts and stuff like that, there's definitely some weird juju out there that I don't understand.
Yeah. I stay away from that. I just stay on my Xbox. Keep it simple, stupid, you know? Just...
Yeah. But if you want to be a troll, go ahead and then prove it wrong. But yes, for everybody who enjoyed this, go check out the website. Check out D'Aleri's Book of North Myths. And if you don't have the time to read and look at pictures, you could always look up Neil Gaiman's Norse mythology book on Audible, and he has a wonderful English voice and is a great narrator. And I personally recommend the story with Fenris, the wolf, because he does a great wolf voice. It's deep and growly and guttural. It's actually scared my children.
Oh, I need to hear this voice.
Yes, it's good.
All right.
All right. So we'll see you guys on the next one. And have a wonderful week.
Yeah, tell us what you want to hear about.
Yeah, tell us what you want to hear about.
That you might not have the time to dig the information up and you want to hear two weirdos in the Midwest of the United States tell you this information. Yeah. Yep.
All right.
Peace.
Peace.